Hi, this is Swan, and you're listening to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm so excited. I'm visiting New York, and I was able to snag my beautiful friends Charlie and Susan, and we performed in the Bushwick Book Club last Friday, and then now we're recording, and thank you guys for being here. You guys might remember them. They're part of the group duo Lusterlit, recently interviewed on Brooklyn Bandstand with Rob. Both songwriters, musicians, interesting people. I don't know what other labels, actress, actor, audio editor, guru.
Experimental cook.
Yeah. Not experiential too. Eating with you is quite the experience.
Oh, thank you. I like to experience my cooking and
It's like a lot of flavors. You also create a really nice mood with sound, music, conversation.
I like
cats.
Conversation, which is why I like to have you over.
Yes. And then I brought in a friend from New Hampshire, Sarah. Sarah Decker is a graduate of the creative writing program at Dartmouth. And so she's going to bring us insights as far as writing and books that she's been influenced by. And we'll just see. We're kind of just like swinging this together because I'll use my cold as an excuse. I had a cold. So colds equal no preparation, right? You just do things and then
exactly.
You just tell everyone you had a cold.
Or NyQuil pack. You know.
Or NyQuil, but then I'd be asleep, which means you guys would just have to
take
the reins.
Yeah. Like, or nudge you.
And now Swan
every
is
five
drooling.
Who's going to nudge Swan now?
Yeah. She's in a NyQuil coma.
So I think that's a great launching point into one of the things we're talking about. How do you perform if you have a cold or allergies? I'm sure you guys have experienced this. And we saw on Friday a girl said she had allergies.
Yeah.
And then she sang perfectly. And so
she didn't
sing
the way she intended, but she did sing amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's what happens. You just have a different voice.
You just sound different.
And you find a way to sing. And then I remember Amy Denio, who is a person who makes amazing music. She lives in Seattle. And I introduced her to Susan when we were on tour, but I knew her in college. And the very first thing she played for me on a cassette was this version of Day Tripper she did. And she had this raspy, cool, sexy voice.
Whoa.
And she was like, I had a terrible cold when I made that. I was like, it was amazing.
I've done some of my favorite demos while having the flu. It's
really?
True. Huh. Yeah. Huh. And my whole head was stuffed up. I love the way it sounded.
I feel like I sound a little bit lower, but more phlegmatic in my head. It's just like...
And there's still
a way
to work through
that. But it's not sexy. It's not raspy. I don't have a sore throat anymore.
No, let us, the audience, just decide that.
Okay, so
well,
you just
tell
kind
you
of,
you're raspy.
You just kind of go with it. Well, I remember in college, I was in this musical theater class, and I remember this girl came in, and she was, like, coughing and sneezing and just so congested, and it was a performance day for our final, and she, like, walked on to perform, and it was like her cold was gone, and she, didn't miss a note, and then as soon as she walked away, it was like, it was just like, whoa. And the teacher was like, this is a testament to how much you actually can
sing,
like, the show must go on.
But
did she do that?
My vocal coach Barbara Mayer was there at the show on Friday, and you know, from training with her, I did learn, you can sing through anything, and we would just go through the warm-ups.
Is it breath work?
It's not just breath work, it's warming up, you know, it's just a commitment to
it's
actually
like muscle
doing
memory?
It. And it's not just muscle memory, it's just doing it, you know?
It's a performance.
Like, it's not just performance, it's just doing it.
It's just doing it.
You know, you make the sound come out, and you do the things that you need to do to lube up and get the breath, you know, flowing. And when you warm up, you can find, you know, you can find where things are vibrating, and you can kind of lift above the phlegm in a certain way too. There's certain little tricks, you know, you can do to clear out your throat if it's very phlegmy, like making a K sound, you know, instead of coughing. You know, you can at the back to clear it. But I find that once you start singing and the air starts to move, things clear out. I did hear
that it's bad. Maybe you have before you sing.
Right. That's why making the K sound is like an alternative to that.
Like just irritates your throat.
And even like the act of humming, you know, it gets things vibrating in your head. And as soon as you find that place of ease with making sound and having air come out the way you want it to and being able to have a little control of that, then you can sing.
And,
I mean,
and I suppose there is also this adrenaline rush that comes with performance that kind of helps you not have a cold for that period of time.
Yeah, because you're focused so hard on what you're presenting. You're just so focused. That's all that you feel. I had experiences like that. I was completely nauseous, and I was throwing up in Kyrgyzstan. I got some kind of bug. The whole house got some weird bug, except like different manifestations of it. I think Maria had diarrhea. I was throwing up. I think Julian had diarrhea and was throwing up. So I
everyone had it coming out of one or both ends.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so before I would go on stage, I would be throwing up, and then once I was on stage, I was fine. And then once I came off, then I'd be throwing up. Yeah.
I had, as a producer in here, mm-hmm. once I had like 103 fever, and I came in and I ran the session, and I had to play, play like a really rocked out guitar solo in this one song, like make up a guitar solo, which is...
which you can do on a good day.
But it turned out really good, and I was really very delirious feeling when I was doing it. And I always go back and listen to that, and it's like... I don't know. There's some stuff I played in there that didn't seem like me. It just like came out.
I wonder if the illness brings you to a higher plane.
Yeah.
You know, because you're.
Well, again, I think it's kind of like what we were just saying a second ago. It's like you.
And maybe also.
Focus to find where the energy is working. And then when that starts flowing, you just go with it.
Right.
And I think it also speaks to something we were talking about just before we hit record, is that you're not the best judge of how you sound. So you're, you know, mid playing it being like, I don't know, but it is, maybe taking some space, you're able to go back and listen to it and be like, oh, that's really great.
Well, in a way it put me in a head that was good for that kind of performance. I think playing a solo, playing a rock guitar solo, for me, sometimes the act of looking for the right note is the solo.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what was going on. I remember thinking like, oh, am I here? I mean, what's going on here? What's it? Now it's over. And then when I listened back to it, like, it was this amazing narrative that just happened because I was looking for the right note and finding it and then moving and resolving. And it's like, so sometimes when you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And because I was sick, it kind of put me in this head of like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Or maybe like, I feel like there's maybe like this weariness, but kind of a relaxation that comes from being sick too, that maybe just helps things flow. Because you're so sick, you don't have time to get anxious or overthink things.
Right.
Sarah, do you have any experiences to share?
Luckily, I have a pretty healthy body.
but I was lucky.
Healthy body.
I do have allergies. And so when they're really severe, like my throat closes up, my eyes. You do tend to kind of get into a creativity outlet in that moment as well. You know, because we were talking about also, like, you don't want to write unless you're miserable. Or, you know, you're not creative.
So if you're
unless,
physically miserable.
Right? Then it's like, oh, then what can I do now, you know, so.
Yeah, I guess. I don't write when, I don't write right now because I have a cold. I just want to watch shows. We watched The Handmaid's Tale. And? I caught up on all of them. It's really intense and kind of uncomfortable, which I'm sure you're not surprised by.
Uh-huh.
And we also watched American Gods because we stayed.
What's that?
It's a TV series on Stars. We watched it through Amazon, but it's based on a book by Neil Gaiman, which is really clever. It's one of his earlier books, though, and I just read it last month, and it sounds like early Neil Gaiman, which was really weird. Talking about how when people immigrated to America, they brought their gods with them, and then the gods kind of have their own conflict and dynamics between each other. It's really interesting. The first couple minutes are very bloody. So you've been warned. Just get through it. Maybe cover your eyes. But So okay. it was really rainy in New York yesterday. So rather
sure
than
was.
Going well, out says, and exploring.
She says we watched, but I actually got lost in Queens in Brooklyn.
Yeah,
so.
And your phone died. So I was like, died. Are you okay?
It was a quintessential horrible New York experience. You know, like phone died, you know, had no idea where I was. I had a transfer because it was the weekend. So
Amy Schumer gave you directions.
Yeah, I think Amy Schumer gave me directions of where to go.
Because you know, so we were going to do her book.
You are?
Yeah, I wanted to do
you
her book.
You can ask her if she met some random
the girl
lost person.
With the
dragon,
really?
Lower,
with
the back, lower back dragon tattoo. Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. I read it. It's funny.
Is she acting in that?
No, it's a book. It's her
lower dragon tattoo. Uh-huh. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. It's kind of like a memoir slash just her riffing. I enjoyed reading it, but I also hadn't seen her comedy before that. Mm-hmm. So I feel like maybe it was a strange introduction because it was a book where she was trying to be a little bit more serious. So, which is appreciated, but yeah. And she makes a lot of dick jokes, which is... I guess
serious.
What girl comedians do to be funny.
Is that?
Because Nagin Farsad did that too, where she was like, yeah, I talk about my dick. And like, it's just like how I don't know.
I guess because genitals are funny.
They are funny, actually, if you think about it.
Mine laughs all the time.
Ha ha. Yours
has its own comedy show, huh?
Yeah, just
you're just channeling cracking things sometimes. Up. Well, what did you guys do yesterday? Did you go out in the rain?
We did to see our friend Deb's art installation, and we were in the rain. It was beautiful. I liked the rain yesterday.
Yeah, at BWAC, Brooklyn Waterfront Artists Coalition.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
That was fun.
Is it open for a period of time?
It is.
So go check it out.
Yeah. You can see it on the weekends from 1 to 6 p.m. And then during the week, I forgot what their hours are, but it's on Van Brunt Street, right across the street from the fairway.
Mm. Oh, nice. I think the internet might know what times they're open.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Great. Yeah, it was nice to go out in the rain in the morning and get wet and then be nice and warm inside the rest of the day for me.
Yes, Charlie enjoyed the car. And enjoyed the experience of being indoors in a car.
Ah, I see. Car you are outside in the rain.
You got a car?
Yeah.
Wow. We have a rental car. It's very strange driving in New York. Have you?
I used to be a car owner.
Me
wow,
too.
That's
and
impressive.
So I'm used to driving in New York.
See, yeah. I'm like, whoa. Although I haven't gotten really mad at anyone yet, which is kind
that's
of...
That's fine. It's helpful not to be
everyone's mad at people. Everyone's been so nice. Mm-hmm. I don't know if New York is just having a nice streak and maybe like I'm going to jinx myself and everyone's
no,
going to hate me.
No, you deserve it, Swan. They're being nice to you because you deserve it.
You know, like I lived here for 2 years and like people are nice sometimes, but you know, people would like bump into you and be like, fuck off. Like, you know, someone bumped into me on the subway and was like, oh, I'm sorry. And I was like, what is happening? Like,
I'm confused. I think it's both. You have both.
I think it's
you know?
Both. But
yeah, I've had, well, when I was on the train too, there's a lady who held the door uh-huh. for a guy with a walker. And,
yeah.
you know, I did just a, like a smile nod of, uh-huh. you know, way to be a good person. So,
yeah, I tell you, morning rush hour or any rush hour, mm-hmm. we're all packed in there. I'm always like giving us all the thumbs up that no one's killing anybody. You
yeah.
know, that's amazing.
We're cohabiting.
You know, giving a look like, good job, no death
we're
today.
We're so uncomfortable. No one's killing anybody. It's
right.
amazing.
It's amazing.
We're doing good.
Right. A lot of people here.
It's amazing that people don't kill each other every day in that situation.
See?
And almost nobody does.
Yeah.
Almost yeah. nobody.
And like driving in the car, like people weren't doing like laying on the horn hocks. They were like beep, beep. And I was like, what?
Yeah, there are certain rules about driving in New York. One of them being, if you're going to do something, just do it and do it fast. You know,
if you just
don't hesitate.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't hesitate.
Yeah.
People get
like,
pissed. Maybe
yeah,
that's maybe that's why I'm just like more comfortable
people,
here.
People
yeah, just do it fast.
Just go do it. And then everyone's like, go ahead, go. Uh-huh. And then you go.
Well, that was me yesterday when I got on the bus, which was the wrong bus because it took me to Queens. I didn't know how to pay, you know, because I had a $20 bill. I didn't have enough change. Mm-hmm. And I just sat down. I was like, I'm just going to sit on this bus until I know what I'm doing. You know, nobody was mean to me or like, get off. And yeah, it was just
well, it might
like,
be because like, we're
I
all
look like a drenched rat.
No, well, no, because you also deserve, you know, people being nice to you, but yeah. Also we're all a part of the same book club now. And it brings us together.
Yes, it's true.
You know, we're
one
all
New York.
Americana.
That's correct.
Right?
Americana, yeah.
By
nice segue.
Ngozi Adichie.
I'm impressed.
So we're all on this journey on this, of life in discovering ourselves and each other,
and we have these great Nigerian characters in our head. We've said Ifemelu a million times to ourselves.
Ifemelu, yeah. How do
we,
you say it?
Yeah, we have that perspective now of these beautiful characters that that Chimamanda created. You know.
Yeah. So quick explanation of this tangent is, first, New York voted one city, one book, and they all voted to read the same book. So if you're not in New York, that's what we're talking about. And the book was Americana by
Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie.
Amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful name.
It is beautiful. Yes. I haven't practiced saying it aloud enough, so I just let you
defer it to somebody else who knows.
And the Bushwick Book Club, being the amazing organization that they are, was asked to use that book in their next book club, which was last Friday. Charlie, Susan, and I performed a piece that we created from the book. And so the characters essentially are Ifemelu.
Or you can say Ifemsko.
Ifemsko, yeah.
Her nickname.
And Obinze.
Uh-huh. Obinze.
Are the two main, I guess the two main characters that we follow as they kind of have their own experiences of being in Nigeria, immigrating,
Ifemelu.
Thank you. We'll blame it on the cold, even though.
Yeah, she has a cold.
Yeah. She goes to America, Obinze goes to London. They kind of, you know, both have these really crazy experiences, because I feel like that's how it is when you're immigrating from one country and culture to another.
Well, yeah, I guess you can call them crazy, but they're normal for immigrants.
Yeah. Or, I mean, even me, and not that it's comparable, but moving from Utah to New York was quite the culture shock for some time. And I'm sure I still offend people just because I'm this naive person from Utah that, like, hasn't. I read a Hemingway book. This is, like, self-disclosure. I messed up. I read a Hemingway book and he talked about how a character had a Jewish nose. So I described a woman like that. And my friend who was Jewish was like, you don't do that. You say she has an Ashkenazi nose. You don't say Jewish nose. And I was like, oh, but Hemingway said it. But Hemingway was racist. Lo and behold, you cannot say everything you read.
But it comes as Sherman.
Yeah. But, you know, if you grow up sheltered, sometimes you just, like, don't have the scope, you don't have the exposure to, like, just, you know, I feel like I'm probably offending people by accident.
No, one of my closest friends, she grew up in the Midwest. She's not sheltered. She's lived in New York for, like, decades. She once said to me, I don't even think of you as Asian. And I'm like, that's not a compliment, actually, you know, but she meant it as a, I was like, oh, I couldn't even explain to her on all the levels. But,
which goes into the book of just, yeah, like, you know, all these things, you know, from the outside looking in, you're like, I don't see what the problem is. And it's like in your inner experience.
Which is why it helps to have things like that written about. In novels and in these ways that we can take in, and by tremendous writers. I love that about writing and how it enters you in a different way than watching a movie or TV would, mm-hmm, or other things.
And
enters you, but like having the words inside you and that perspective, like inside you.
And it's a different process too.
Yeah.
Internally.
Yeah. I feel like it's sort of like being possessed.
Yeah. Oh, and as a writer too, it is almost like being possessed when you create something.
Okay.
In a way, because I know when I'm writing a character, when they come out, I'm like, I don't know where you came from, because you weren't inspired by this person or that
so
person,
interesting,
but you were fully fleshed, you know, as I was writing you. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So
I don't know.
That, is that why you write, so you can be possessed?
Yeah.
Which is why you have to be experiencing some discomfort in your life in order to write.
Exactly, so that the spirits can enter you.
Well, and I've heard it said before by a multitude of people, but Yvonne said it last night, or Friday night. She gave a talk about her experience, mm-hmm, of being, you know, from multiple different from different cultures, and she meant, like, said this was the first time I've heard a story like mine in a book.
Yeah,
and I feel like
we do,
and that's why we need more books from all kinds of diverse people. And
yeah, right, I agree.
So that people can read their own story. And as a writer, that's like, you know, the challenge of a writer is write the book that you wish you had read or that you could read.
Right.
You know.
Well, when I was doing my rambling yesterday, my walkabout of New York, I went to an anarchist book fair. It was like their 11th annual near Washington Park.
In a church.
In a church, which is so cool. I was like, I love this place. And I met this guy. He does comics. And he said, you know, as a writer, you need to produce more of this material, because he does more activism, kind of like a queer agenda in a way, you know, like getting that out. But he also said, like, we need to demand more of this so that it is produced, you know, so that people are creating it, you know. So the more that we pick up books like Americana, you know, then the more the industry will, you know.
Yeah. I also, I love something Bell Hooks said. It was on the New York Public Library podcast. It was the special for Black History Month. And she said, you know, all these writing coaches are like, write what you know, write what you know. And she's like, I challenge you to write what you don't know. Write about that prostitute. Write about, like, you know, this, like, write about the people that are so foreign to you that you have to really put yourself into a completely different. And I think especially as, you know, especially like white male authors, go find diverse characters to pull into your books to make them, you know, more real and to be able to speak to more people. Is that a platform? Am I allowed to say that?
Well, of course you were.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting just what we've just been discussing in the past 5 minutes. It's like this book, it's titled Americana, which is the name that the Nigerian people would call American, or the experience of of immigrants in America.
Coming back to Nigeria.
And America, for better or worse, is a place where all these people of different diverse backgrounds come together. And so they have these weird communication moments where they're like, you don't seem Asian to me. Or and that opens up a dialogue and a an experience that wouldn't necessarily have been opened up when people are in their origin country. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what one of the points of the book was. In Nigeria, nobody talks about race.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, to come to America, it was...
then race exists.
Race exists. Yeah.
Because you're among all these other different races.
Right.
And so
it opens up that whole story, and that whole dialogue opens.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that makes... it's interesting. That's why this is the title of the book, in a way. Because you could have titled it anything.
Right.
I had the same opposite experience, though. You know, she experiences race for the first time coming to America. Since I grew up here mostly, I mean, I was born in Korea, but then I came here when I was really young. So, you know, I pretty much only know what it's like to be like one of many different races, you know, and when I went to Korea for the first time as a young adult, that's when I experienced, oh, this is what it's like when you're just normal. When you're just what it is, when you're just what it means to be a person.
When you're what everyone else.
Yeah. So that means like, oh, I can, like, it was really kind of incredible just to walk around and see the advertisements and anything that was on TV, anything that's represented is you.
Hmm.
And that means like the villains are Korean, the jocks are Korean, all the archetypes are Korean. Yeah, it was great. I mean, I didn't know what that felt like because, you know, I grew up here. So it's like, oh, only the nail salon workers are Korean, or there's only this type of Korean that's represented in culture.
Was
you know?
It foreign? Was it a little, was it strange or uncomfortable for you at first?
It was great. You know, it was great just because it's like, oh, this is what it feels like to be the dominant culture.
It
you know?
Was a little comforting.
It was, way, it, you know, it, I'm like, this is what it could be. This is what, it's, you have a different sense of place and belonging and different like gravity as a person. I feel like, you know, when you're like, oh, I'm a, I don't know. But on the other hand, it's like, where I'm, you know, because I grew up here, like where I'm most comfortable is when I'm seeing people of all kinds of backgrounds. So in that sense, like once I landed back in GFK and I'm, you know, seeing, you know, people of all different
that felt like
color. Yeah. All different shades of, you know, shades of people.
Right.
You know, I was like, oh, okay, now I'm home. But, so I don't know. It's weird. There's a tension and a conflict, you know, between both of them, you know.
Yeah.
Both situations.
Well, and I think, I mean, I love exposure to things that for me are foreign. And I think maybe the thing that needs to, I don't know, I feel like America is pretty supportive of American culture. But if we pull in, you know, these cultures of the people who actually live here and share them with each other, how much more rich for everyone?
Well, that's, to me, is American culture.
Right.
Especially
to me,
New York.
American culture is...
Yeah, is, not in the Midwest.
Well, I don't know, but that's all...
There's not an identifiable thing.
Embrace all of it.
Yeah,
that's true.
Like, it's an embracing of all these different things, and that's what American culture is. It's not... There's no barometer that it's like this one thing. It shifts all the time.
That's
all
true.
These different things.
And with like...
I guess you weren't there for like the last show that we did with Nagin Farsad, but like one of the things I said there kind of applies. I mean, one of my boyfriends, he grew up in Indiana, and we had visited his hometown, and we're in this place in rural Indiana, and we're walking down these train tracks, and he said, "Wow, you're probably the first and like Asian to ever like walk in this field." And I'm like,
and you're like,
"Are you kidding? We built these train tracks."
Right. Right.
You know, so it's like there has always been like that's what America is to me, you know.
I appreciate that.
And people from all over the place. And initially even like, you know, those white people came from someplace, you know, and like all different, you know, cultural things. It's always been, you know,
the
this
melting pot.
Yeah. Not just melting pot, but just you know, this crossing over and interlacing, you know, sort of like hair being braided. Ah, you like that? That was a big
If you read the book, you just got that. Impressive.
Brought a full circle.
But it's like, you know, but growing up here and as not of the, you know, like dominant race, whatever, it's like I was always hyper aware of how I was perceived. And like, and I think if you are of the dominant race, you're not maybe as aware of that, you know, or maybe you are, I don't know. But it made me like, really aware of that. And I don't know, I had somewhere to go with this and now I forgot.
I mean, it's just the tide of American culture is towards the dominant race being watered down or to being not watered down. Being
homogenized.
And or not even homogenized. The diversification of everything will continue. It's like against the tide of history to be concerned that like, white culture
is
getting washed away, and the people worried about their Confederate statues being taken down in Virginia and stuff like that. I've been reading about this week. It's like, it's so backwards and so, I don't know. Again, I'm referring back to that.
I have a friend who, I'm sure lots of people, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, go ahead.
I have a friend, and I'm sure many people have a similar experience. His parents are incredibly Republican. And so what he's been doing, which I admire, is he's been actually like consuming a lot of Republican like literature and trying to like really understand that perspective so that he can kind of mend a relationship with his father and kind of understand where he's coming from, which I admire because I don't have the patience or the interest in doing that. But I think that's kind of the political problem is that we're just like, they're wrong.
Right.
And I think that's could be applied to most situations where any kind of judgment is being passed in a violent or nonviolent way is just like, oh, you're wrong and I'm right. And so just maybe like eliminate that narrative and just be like, you are and I am.
Right. Yeah. And inclusive.
I wanted to go back to, I think something you said about, the feeling of being like the dominant race, but the one thing to remember is that we are all part of the dominant race, which is humanity.
Right.
You know, there's not one more than the other. It's we're all together.
Yeah.
And when we realize that, then, you know, we accept those differences. We, you know, embrace the qualities that everyone has to bring to this
ultimately,
world.
Ultimately, yeah. And it's neat, you know, because it's like, okay, we're having, you know, a discussion and about race and it's often the source of, and our perceptions of it. And it's often the source of, you know, conflict and tension, but at the same time, like amazing things come out of these discussions, and amazing things come out of us sharing and and interacting. So you can't necessarily separate that. We should definitely spend as much time acknowledging that as well. I mean, and it's funny because when I travel outside this country, when I see other Americans, you know that you know who your people are, and no matter what color they are, if they're American, you're like, oh, you see, we have so much more in common in this country. You know, as Americans, as different as we are, we're still Americans. We have so much more in common than like see the rest of the people in this country, which is not our home country, because our home country is America. You know, and like I go to those people and they look at me and I don't look like them. You know. Physically, but so they might not realize that we have as much in common. But it's like, dude, I know what it's like to watch Mork and Mindy right. at 4 p.m. and eat a lot of Doritos, and so do you. You know, like I know what it's like to, you know, to go to the high school prom or not. Right. You know, because your parents don't allow you to, but I know what it is.
That is something I appreciate.
Little cultural things, you know, we share as Americans that other people don't know.
I think that's something I appreciate in the book, is that she did take, you know, a lot of American pleasures, I guess, preferences with her.
Yeah. And like, I like that she also illustrated that, like the layers and subtlety and complexity of all that.
And the things that surprise you, like from, you know, going from one culture to another. Two questions. First, are you guys creating a podcast with the Bushwick Book Club for How to Make White People Laugh?
We wanted to as well. And so, you know, that's
we
still
did a promo thing on the show for it. So I'm just checking in with our audience.
We had plans to do it. And then we got overtaken by this Americana stuff. And then I'm like, oh, I really want to get the Americana podcast up before the One Book, One New York initiative is over.
Yeah. You know, I think it's possible that our podcasts may take the form of different lengths. So we may do some shorter mini podcasts for Making White People Laugh, and use some of the interviews that we did for that,
right.
and release them as podcasts.
Basically, you can't win them all. Maybe
no, you can. We're winning everything.
Or no, the real principle is like, do things, but don't do them perfectly. Do them shabbily, because done is better than perfect.
Well, that is
my motto.
Well, shabbily, like maybe you can let other people decide if they want whether something's shabby or not, you know, whatever.
And
you know,
that's the thing, is like, you can't, what got me through my memoir, which is what I did for my my master's, is the mantra, done, not perfect, because it's always
work in progress.
Right. And I'm always going to, I look at it from now and again, and like, I can fix that. But unless it's out there, you can't, you know, mend and
right.
add a little.
There's nothing to work with.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes looking for the right note is the solo.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Nice. I like it. So my experience with this book was kind of interesting in the sense that I read it thinking that I was going to do a dance. And then all of my ideas just felt so hard coming. And I think another person apparently had a similar experience where they were going to do a dance inspired by the book.
Yes, the other dancers also ditched
the dance. Wah, wah. The space was kind of tight, but I usually improvise a little bit. So it was hard to try and pull symbols without cultural appropriation and without being offensive. I was talking to a woman who is African American, and I was talking about trying to like, oh, maybe I could incorporate something with my hair changing. And she was like, no. And I was like, whoa. And you know, I mentioned like, well, in the book, you know, she's from Nigeria, but she like has no problem letting white like people touch her hair. And she's like, that's because she's not from America. In America, you don't let people touch your hair. And that's like,
yeah,
all this
she
cultural
totally
stuff
wrote right. about that in the
yeah
book.
She, and yeah. so you know, trying to pull symbols that were going to be like something that I felt like I could.
I think you could have done it whatever you wanted.
This is,
you know,
true.
This is also
a safe space
book club. Yeah. You know, and also it's like the way you're presenting, you know, it's like what you're saying with those symbols. It's not just, you know. Yeah
so I ended up writing a poem.
It's intent.
Well, good.
And it's on Facebook page for Bushwick Book Club if you want to go check it out.
It's a very good poem.
Thanks.
I mean, I think the whole trigger warning thing is a little, can really dampen creativity in a way.
But I also agree with it too, because there are people who have, the trigger warnings are great for them so that they have that chance to kind of step out if they know that they're going to be affected in a way that isn't.
That's fair. Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
It's hard because, like, you know, you can't produce when you're worried about offending people. You can't right. be creative. But I think that you also, I forgot what I was going to say, but something about, like, you know, if you're the type of person who's being offended, that's an opportunity to, like, look within yourself and see what you're reacting to. I really love when things make me uncomfortable because it, you know, if I'm safe, because it gives me a chance to be like, oh, why is, like, that person just mentioned this weird, you know, sexual preference. Why is that making me so uncomfortable? Or, like, whatever it is, you know, it's a chance to be like, I just judged that. Let me look and see what I don't know, am confronting.
Right. I mean, I think you should.
But not everyone does that. Some right. people just get offended and then get mad.
It's important to sit with your uncomfort, though, as well. You know, because yeah. then you have that internal dialogue of, you know, what does this say about me that I'm uncomfortable with this, or, you know, my mm. perception of this person that's making me uncomfortable, or, you know, just the idea of it, something I haven't explored or I wanted to explore, but I'm afraid to.
Yeah. So. Or the hardwiring that we're all given as a child of, like, here's your worldview. And right. then you spend the rest of your life being like, I don't like that piece. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to add this and this. I'm trying to get rid of this, but it's not really coming out yet. So
it's attached to this one.
Yeah, this one seems critical. It's like a pillar. I should probably not
take that one worldview.
Down. Should probably still a work in progress.
Reinforce right. that before I remove that pillar. Yeah. Like, yeah. It's an allegory.
Not... I want to talk about what you had mentioned earlier about how you were saying you'd only write when you're unhappy.
Oh.
That was interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because it reminded me of how people, you know, some people eat when they're sad. Some people can't eat when they're sad. Right. And some people, you know, and it's funny, just yeah. everyone's different.
I mean, I
eat all the time, but yeah.
I could write, but for me personally, I don't feel like it has that poignant essence to it, you know, mm-hmm. as it does when it comes from sorrow or, you know, self-loathing or... you know, a bad breakup, you know, and so I've been happily in a relationship for almost a decade. So I guess the things that I write gave me a chance. When I started my creative writing program, let me step back, I thought I was going to do like a thing on poetry, you know, or mm-hmm. do like a research project on this, you know, young female poet in the 1930s. But none of that happened. Because when I started my program, everything that I wrote was an essay, a personal essay. And I normally don't do that. And I was like, you know, that genre is not my cup of tea, but it ended up, you know, being like a 140-page memoir about growing up and, you know, experiencing what it means to find yourself, you know, aside from the past that you come with. So, but
what are you working on now?
Nothing. I'm happy.
I feel like I maybe speak to this as
that published, I guess.
Oh, nice.
And maybe speak to this as for me, I feel like my challenge has been either having angst that I'm not in a relationship or angst that I'm in a relationship and don't have time to create. Mm. So I feel like it's kind of a hard thing to be creative and also be in a relationship because the
and
relationship
if you're sharing like a one bedroom apartment, forget about it.
Yeah. It doesn't you don't have
and there's like no space for your piano except like right where, you know, he needs to do his work too.
Right.
Like
yeah, where you sleep. You sleep under the piano.
There
no,
you go.
No. Yeah. That's after I moved out. That's when I was like, oh, the perfect
this isn't
place
working.
For a piano is right next to your bed. Because then you could just roll out of bed and start playing and also then when you
it's
can
like,
play until you get tired and then roll into bed.
So. It's like morning it pages, both. But for piano. Uh-huh. You know, Julia Cameron wrote the artist way and she's like, first thing in the morning you have to write 3 pages.
She's
train
very
of thought
strict.
Very strict. So take that, you know, incorporate it into your life. My thing is like, I'll write my dreams if I remember them.
Oh, neat.
Because it's especially really interesting going back and being like, oh, I remember that dream. But if you don't write them down, then they just kind of like go off into the ether.
Yeah.
See, I have my friend tell me his dreams because that's fodder for my creativity as well, you know. Like I have a screenplay based on a character that he imagined and then kind of embellished a love story with it and dystopic universe. And so, yeah.
Yeah. I've been having very normal dreams lately. It's kind of disappointing.
I can't even remember my last real dream. So
my dream last night was, I wrote it down this morning. It was like cleaning up a camper. And then my mom came in and I was like, oh, time to leave. And I went into a tent with my brother. So I suppose we were camping. I don't know.
Sounds better than mine. Mine anxiety dreams and nightmares. Thank you very much.
I think my problem is I just don't sleep deeply enough to have dreams when I'm anxious. Oh. But I definitely, nightmares. I don't know. I guess I should be grateful my dreams are normal because nightmares aren't not fun. Sometimes you wake up and you're like, I feel so terrible.
I have really weird sleep patterns, okay?
Yep.
And
we've heard.
Yeah, okay. And so that can really affect how I remember the dreams, especially if I'm taking a short nap or I'm taking a very short sleep. Mm. And because I've been having, I don't know, I've had these series of dreams. They kind of recur, and I'm in like this traveling tube or a traveling like water slide
vagina.
That goes through the
city. Birth canal. It a
is,
birthing
it,
thing.
Yeah, it is a birthing that. Thing, I guess.
Yeah. And Charlie's inside a vagina.
We're just interpreting.
There was a waterfall at the end, so that's you know.
Woo-hoo! Was it a spaceship? Because there's nice. A vagina.
But then there was a whole series of connecting train tunnels that we were all looking at each other, and it was going through. It was like an overlapping like spaghetti pile of highway. Overpasses, but everyone was on these different trains and they could see each other, but we weren't in the actual trains. We were just sitting and moving through it very quickly. And, and I've had a series of
invisible
dreams like
trains.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. Recurring dreams. I haven't had one in a long time, but definitely have had them.
I work on songs in my dreams too.
That's great. Yeah, that's what meditators are like, you know,
I'm like flipping over words. I'm flipping over, you know, melodies and like different things,
yeah.
You know, cause like after a while you just get it so on the brain, you're doing it. Yeah. Morning, noon and night. And yeah. In your sleep.
See, I found out, you know, like I'd get, a line for a poem or just a line that I really liked. And if I went to sleep on that, then I forgot it. But if I wrote it down, then I forgot why it was so significant. but I used to always like sleep with a notebook and a pen by my bedside because I would wake up with like something in my brain and it would just come straight out, you know?
Yeah,
and you have to do that in the moment. You know, you can't just like box it up and be like, okay, we'll deal with you later, because then it flies away. Yeah. It has its own.
When I'm trying to finish a song,
I
keep the notebook and paper by the bed,
right?
Yeah,
and try to write first thing when I wake
right.
up,
right? Because
all of a sudden, it's like sometimes, like what Susan was saying, if there's certain parts that maybe I'm stuck on, and then all of a sudden when I'm writing. When
it
just wakes up,
out,
it just goes right, and all of a sudden
comes
it
out.
Loosens up.
Like, well, that's what kind of happened to me with this dance. Is like, okay, I won't do a dance. It's just really not working. I just like feel like I kept like, nope, not working. Nope, not working. Nope, not working. I'm like, okay, I'll write a poem. So writing for hours and hours and hours, and like, okay, where's the poem? And then it finally just like plopped out at the end.
Oh, nice.
I was like, oh, that was not bad. We'll do that. Like, but it makes me think of like lucid dreaming. The ancients developed this practice of lucid dreaming. It was developed by ancient meditators so that they could meditate when they sleep. But it makes sense if you're like calling as a songwriter that you would like develop this ability to lucid dream consciously or unconsciously so that you could, you know, hone in your craft even in your sleeping hours. Interesting. Well, there is this article about ways to boost creativity. Do you guys have any interest in hearing about
sure.
it?
Sure.
Yeah.
Great. So this is from our Authors Publish.
Boost creativity.
Uh-huh. And 11 ways to boost creativity. And the first one is look at more visual art. I find that helps me. Especially in a gallery, though. If I just look on a computer screen, it's a different experience. But I think that's... There's an experience of going out into a gallery and like getting in the mind of someone.
We just did that yesterday.
Yeah, we did.
Right. Yeah.
I don't usually do it. Visual art, I find, you know, confounding.
Confounding?
I often don't know how to take it in or something. I feel like I'm doing it wrong or my sister's a visual artist, and so I don't know, maybe I'm intimidated or something.
You're like, oh, that's her thing, it's not my thing.
Yeah, or just like, oh, I can't, I don't know how to speak about it intelligently. And for me, I guess putting things into words is really important. So if I can't put it into words, you know, what do I have? I have nothing. But I just have an emotion, and I hate those. No! Are you an emotion? Get away!
No, you need to be afraid of the emotion.
You're not allowed to get near me!
Oh, my goodness. So I guess this is going in the place of our rapid-fire questions. I usually end my show with a series of rapid-fire. Now we're just doing rapid-fire.
Fire away.
Creativity. What about changing your location? Sometimes going to a different place, changing the environment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Breathing some
time.
Breathing
parks,
different air,
beaches,
seeing different light.
Museums.
That was like my little story.
Coffee shops.
Writing for Nagin's book.
I love going into strangers' homes, which is why Walking Dogs was fantastic for me, because you go into this canvas that someone else has created and you just get to look at it and be like, this is your life.
Right.
And also that's the appeal of couch surfing is, you know, rather than going to a hotel room that's a blank slate, and that can be really helpful, you're going into this, you know, place with character and history and mismatched dishes and, you know, noisy neighbors. It's just like, never know what you're going to get.
I went to a bar and got kind of drunk, and then I went home and kind of passed out, and then I woke up and the song fixed itself. That all of a sudden, this thing came out and I recorded it into the phone, and that became the song for the Nagin thing.
Right.
Well, for, nice.
Go ahead.
Oh no! For the Nagin show, I wrote most of my song at my mom's place, and that was stressful just to go home and, you know, and be with mom. And, but
moms are always moms.
Yeah.
Even when you grow up, they're still moms, and you're like, okay, I'm a grown up now.
And I didn't know if I'd be too stressed out to write in that environment, but it was kind of refreshing to get away from home and those distractions and anxieties. And then all of a sudden, and to use the piano that I grew up playing, and learning piano on. Yeah. That was a neat experience too, to use that for chords and to find the song.
It's like stepping back into something that's foreign and familiar.
And there was so much to eat there. So I got to do a lot of anxiety eating while I was writing.
Zing! I find that food really grounds me, though. So I don't feel like it's a bad thing for me to eat as a way to ground myself to create. Because if I eat, I feel like I tend to be really flighty and like kind of, I don't know, scattered energy. So for me, like anxiety eating is not anxiety eating. It's grounding my body and my mind in the present.
Very good. It's creative eating.
You can start a whole trend of grounded eating.
Yeah.
I'll create some groups.
Are you going to say something? I was going to say, I mean, I love to travel and kind of get out of my own comfort zone, because that's when those new experiences come at you and you're open to them. I mean, every day is a new experience, but if you're kind of comfortable with it, you know, used to it, then you don't really embrace it. But when you're out of your comfort zone, that's when those experiences, I think, get more vivid and memorable, to where you want to create a song about it or write a poem or a story or whatever it is. So.
Right. It's sort of like, you know, you may be in your home country where, you know, you're the dominant race, so you don't really see yourself as a race until you go to another country,
right,
and then
all of
a sudden you're like, it's uncomfortable, but you're seeing yourself in juxtaposition to
exactly.
And then you're defined as this other thing and that you didn't even know you were.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's great, sometimes, you know, let's just say it's all great.
It all is. I can say that much. It all is. So the next point is like familiar for New Yorkers, but spend more time walking. Mm. It's like a common adage. Mm-hmm. If you're stuck, go for a walk.
I like that. Yeah.
Do you guys do that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like that.
I mean, I recently got rid of my car because we live in town. And so I pretty much bike or walk everywhere. And it is different. I mean, you're in your head more than I think if you're driving. Because if you're driving, you're more like on this outside, you know, what's this person doing? What are they doing? You know, I'm kind of following robotic, you know, movements. But walking, it's like, you know, I look up at the trees and I see like eyes and I'm like, oh, that's so creative and fun. And or like, you know, there's...
I think walking has a rhythm too. That, you get those body rhythms going and then...
Your blood flowing.
Yeah,
blood flowing.
Yeah, that is true.
I think the mind is just another organ of the body. So you're the brain's another organ of the body, rather. And so your mind can start generating things in that rhythm and it just makes things flow. Yeah.
Well, your mind and the belly are connected, so you're jiggling the belly, getting all that stuff
going. Back to the food. Let's bring back the food.
Yeah, right. Where's our food? Apparently we're hungry. We haven't had breakfast yet. change the time that you write. So I guess this is like find your creative peak time and then change it up. I don't know. When are you guys creative? I find I feel like I'm creative in the morning before like 11. That's when
I try it all the different times.
Yeah, I was never one of those writers who could actually make a schedule. You know, like I had a set time. This is when I was going to write. Never worked out. Like, no. It has to come when it comes. I don't force it. So, you know.
Yeah, I force it all the time.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
How does that work?
I try forcing it. I try not forcing it. You know, it's like you force it and then you're like, meh. And then if it, you know, it may not feel good, but then you may look at what you had put down later and be like, oh, actually that part does work.
I could piece this out.
Yeah. It's important to look at stuff later. And also sometimes the thing of not... the wu wei, the flow thinking, where you just do something else that's mindless after you've been focusing really hard, and all of a sudden something gets unblocked, or you're
like
watching something, even watching a television commercial, all of a sudden one little word will go and it'll be like,
what?
Oh my god, that's the whole verse, and then all of a sudden I can write a whole verse.
It's like,
I don't know what I was waiting for, but that moment happened.
Was it Einstein that played the violin when he was stuck on a mathematical problem?
Washing dishes or whatever. You know.
Richard Feynman played bongos, you know.
Ooh, I'm reading a book by him about finding, what is it, Get to Tuva, where he's trying to get to Mongolia.
Oh, cool.
I just started it.
I want to read more of him. Maybe that should be the next one.
Could be. Or my current favorite book, Cinnamon and Gunpowder, with the female pirate who has red hair that I was telling you about.
Oh,
and the chef who's like, you know, different colors.
Do you find yourself in the character?
Yeah, that one's my book, I think. I keep telling everyone else to read it, but I
have to get that from you before we leave.
You're telling me about that before.
Attend some sort of a conference or a retreat. Have you guys ever done that with music?
No,
or like I don't think I have residency.
I went to Naropa Institute for a summer. This was a long time ago, and I played improvised music with people from the band Oregon, and I meditated with the Buddhists, and I saw Allen Ginsberg.
I thought about going to Naropa.
That was really opening, and we played. There was a multidisciplinary improvisation class, and. And we would do duets, basically, with people who are a dancer or a poet, and then you would just walk up there and, like...
And go.
And I remember there was somebody that I met, he was a saxophone player, and he played, like, he was like Coltrane, like that sheets of sound, kind of like, he was just like... And I had electric guitar there, and we did a duet in the apartment that I was staying in. He came over, and we made this crazy noise for about 20 minutes. And we stopped, and everyone was like screaming at us to shut up. And then the next day, the teacher said, "I heard this amazing music in the apartment
complex." That was us.
But that was a really good experience. And it was like, I was young, I was like 21, and it was really kind of crazy to do something like that with nobody I knew and just go to this place.
Is that all? That's not 11.
That's not 11, but I don't think we can get through 11. The next one is join a book club.
Done and done.
That kind of brings it all back.
So we just did that. Uh-huh. And that was fantastic. And I do really appreciate what you do. And you always support and participate and encourage people to just come and create something. And it doesn't have to be good.
It doesn't have to be finished even. It doesn't have to be perfect.
People There's finishing no things the day of.
The day of that... The last performer, you know, trying to find that into
that
her
last
song.
First, yeah.
Yeah.
It can be whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyways.
Can you help me choose the book for the next one? Because I need to pick one.
Oh, my goodness. That's what the conch cell is.
The conch picks the book. Wow.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
Had some others in there? Or we just have a few options.
Oh, yeah, just I have a few options in here. I figured maybe we could draw one out.
Yes.
I don't know. Who wants to
I'm
do the,
far
who
away.
Should do the drawing?
I'm right here next to you.
Okay, you should do the drawing. All right. As our guest, as our visitor.
Ooh, the right? book club
yes.
audience
the book,
member.
Book club conk.
That's right. Is there,
I got to take a
Is
picture.
There a story
Crossover.
Behind the book club conk?
Well, it comes from the house of Deb and Jason, and they make the cocktails for us. They make
And also, we can do some plugs. Keep an eye out on the radio waves with Radio Free Brooklyn. We've got a couple book club specials in the future. And the suspense is killing
us. Steve
Martin!
Steve Martin!
Steve Martin is the one
you
said, yeah.
Steve Martin's book for June 6th. It's decided. Thank you so
June
much
6th.
For helping
me
with that decision. I have a Gemini rising, and that decisions are often terrible for me. So I really appreciate this. Will you bring
welcome.
Her back
yeah.
next time she can
make our
me.
Decisions
or,
for us?
Yeah. Or anytime I see
I'm
you,
it.
I'm just going to have you make a decision for
okay,
me.
Okay, sure.
Excellent.
Just like, this is the decision I want you to have.
I have an old soul, so, you know, I might be wise enough to make those decisions. Just don't tell me to make your personal
decisions. As long as I don't have to do it. You know.
Well, thanks for listening. Again, this is Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn, and...
Thank you, Swan.
Thank you, Swan.
Thank you, Swan.
Thank you for inviting me on the show.
Email me, inkandworm, all spelled out, lowercase, @gmail.com, and I'll leave you with a word, take it or leave it. Frisian.
Flight, get off the ground. The boys just wanna get off the ground. Even if he never flew, he always had the bird's eye view. The things he saw, no one ever knew. The things that he kept from you. It was a form of love. 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 A place where Mingus ruled, made space that always grooved. Fat slap bitches, born hormones. We all pine for those middle spaces where Josephine Baker laid waste to Paris. Father Blue peaked on the charts, and a teenage Elvis sat in the sun. Studios watching the prisoners, watching the prisoners, watching the prisoners. What you just liked was the feeling of the wind in your hair. I want to be